Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. It's off to Sicily for Lorraine Bracco tonight as she begins My Big Italian Adventure on Home and Garden Television. HGTV executive Lauren Ruck joins me next. Our second stop this pre-Halloween afternoon takes us to Exile Content, an enterprise opening English and Spanish language television opportunities to Latino creators. We'll find out Exile's progress next half hour with Chief Executive Alejandro Uribe live from Mexico City and team member Nando Villa from Los Angeles. And also tonight, Showtime explores the controversial practice of biohacking on Citizen Bio. Trish Stillman, the special director and executive producer Graham Maxson of Snowpiercer and Orphan Black fame, will connect with us an hour from now. Also ahead, news notes, our classic trivia question, and Prairie Executive Free Agency is our takeaway of the week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. Presented on Amazon Music and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. This is audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Happy to have you with us on this pre-Halloween 2020 edition of the program all about TV's current and future. 40 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. The sun has broken out after more than a day of the remnants of Hurricane Zeta. They passed through pretty quickly, and now we've got the sun and hopefully a very bright and dry Halloween weekend. Wherever it is where you are, we hope you celebrate it great and celebrate it wonderful with your kids and your family members and so on and so forth, and be great with all the kids that come for your trick-or-treats out there. We have a great 90-minute lineup of people for you, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone and dial in. 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's good anywhere you'll catch us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio. And if you're shy about using the phone, we got our chat room. It's busy and ready for you. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And remember, you can connect others anytime while the program is on through Facebook timeline. Just click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk speaker to your screen, or follow the instructions. Other people will be live with you. Lauren Ruck from HGTV is joining us live from New York after these news notes. The post-creamy content marketplace is off and buying. And HBO Max will pick up a show that was in development there called Public Figures. It's a New York City-based drama about aspiring local influencers, starring and executive produced by Yil Yachty. Actor John Turturro will next turn up on TV through Severance, Apple TV's upcoming workplace saga. Max will afford with This Country, put together by writer Jenny Dix, director Paul Feig. It's a comedy about two cousins observed by a documentary crew. And going up transgender in Kansas City is the subject of HBO special Trans Hood, running on November 12th. And that is news notes for today. My first guest is a key senior executive at Home and Garden Television, which tonight breaks loose with a new series starring the Oscar and Emmy-nominated co-star of The Sopranos, Marry the Mob, and other pictures and TV shows, the one and only Lorraine Bracco. It's called My Big Italian Adventure. And joining me live here in New York is the group senior vice president of Family Development at HGTV, Lauren Ruck. Lauren, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
It's a pleasure. So tell us about how Lorraine Bracco got into this Big Italian Adventure.
I mean, this is a really funny story because Lorraine ended up calling me saying that she was interested in buying one of these 1 euro homes in Italy. And she asked if we would want to be part of the adventure. And so when we heard that she was going to be pursuing this, regardless of whether or not HGTV was involved, we knew that we wanted to be part of this. So we followed her through the entire process, beginning to end, going to town, looking, meeting the mayor, looking at properties, eventually putting together a team that was going to help her design it and work on it. And it's just been such a fun process because it was one of those inspiration items that she came up with. And then before you know it, it blossomed into this really great series.
A number of years ago, there was an Oscar-nominated movie called Under the Tuscan Sun. Diane Lane starred in it. It's all about a woman who decides to move from New York to the Tuscany region of Italy, and she decides to inhabit and remodel this house that's been around for a very long time. I'm curious whether either Lorraine or you saw that movie and got some ideas for it, if you did, for the show.
It's interesting that you say that. I had not thought about it that way, although I've seen the movie. But what we saw in this was the opportunity to turn something that was about $1.30 into a dream. And that was what was so exciting, and in the same way that the Tuscan Sun provided. And so we saw someone who had family roots and connections to Sicily, a love of the region, and the ability to create a home for her family there. And so we saw a very dreamy and aspirational adventure, which is why it became my big Italian adventure.
So what are people going to learn when they see Lorraine work with this house?
They're going to learn a lot. I think you're going to learn, first of all, just how fabulous and funny Lorraine Bracco is, although you might already know that. I think what you won't realize is just how challenging it is to renovate a hundreds-of-year-old house in Italy, especially, well, poor Elaine was going back and forth from the States the entire time because she had other obligations and work. So it's a fun romp because you really get to experience renovation in a land that's so different than here in the States. But you also get to see the joys of Italy. You get to see the foods and the culture and the scenery, and you get to see all of this being managed by a favorite celebrity. So it's a really fun adventure all the way through, and you learn a lot.
Mm-hmm. Did I understand that she did this in a way on the fly, that she was going back and forth between the United States and Italy to do this? And I understand there was a story that came out today in Cable Fact Daily that in one of those trips to Italy that she found that the roof had been blown off.
Yes, that was my favorite moment in the whole series. I mean, I feel slightly guilty for laughing at it now because I know how stressful it was for her at the time. But my favorite part of the show was Lorraine was going back and forth to project manage this and also live her normal life back in the States. And during, a couple months into the process, she shows up and she thought a roof was being rescued and it just collapsed. And so she goes into her home and looks up, and you literally see the blue sky above her head. And she just looks up, and it's comical, and it's funny, although it's heartbreaking because at the time it was so stressful. But it just makes the show fun because there's so much drama doing renovation in a place that with, like, cobblestone streets and old buildings and in a small town. It just – it provided a lot of great moments from the, like, viewer experience of it all.
You know, when we think about Lorraine, particularly if you've seen The Sopranos and her Emmy-nominated performance on that classic series, you know, being the psychologist to Tony Soprano, played by the late, great James Gandolfini, how analytical she was. Was she just as or less or more so analytical when it came to this project?
That's a great question. I would think of her, she was not as much analytical as she was wonderfully, like, emotional is what I would say. She has great taste, first of all. So, like, her decisions for design were stunning and beautiful. But she made her decisions really quickly. The entire project from beginning to end, from literally the day that she decided to buy the place until it was already completed, was under a year, which is miraculous. And I think part of that was that she really did know what she wanted. She did know what her design styles were. And so I think she was not at all analytical on that front. In fact, she was more like just enthusiastic about the whole process and trusting in her own both taste and decision.
Lorraine Bracco begins My Big Italian Adventure tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on Home and Garden Television. And we have one of the key executives at HGTV, Lauren Brookwitz. He is Group Senior Vice President of Farming Development, and he joins me here in the Big Apple this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Applebaum will be live from New Haven, New York, where it's 40 degrees. Sun is broken out after more than a day of the remnants of Hurricane Zeta. Looking forward to a great Halloween weekend. Hope you are, too. And if you have a question or a comment for Lauren, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We're kicking off November on Monday on our program, and we got a great opening guest for the month, the co-star of the new CBS series, Be Positive, Sarah Rue. If you know her, you know that she's one of the great scene stealers in terms of sitcom television, and she's got a great role in this new program from Chuck Lorre and Company. It's CBS's only new comedy series this fall, and it premieres next Thursday night. We've got Sarah with us. She will be our lead guest. And if you missed our episode on Wednesday with Bill Holberg, the executive producer of the new Netflix sensational miniseries, The Queen's Gambit, well, you're in luck. We got the film editor who did it all the way through. Her name is Michelle Tesoro, and she is one of the hottest film editors for miniseries television. Among her credits, another show that was written and directed by Scott Frank, Godless, that ran on Netflix 2 years ago, and last year's Emmy and Peabody Award winner from Ava DuVernay, When They See Us. Michelle Tesoro and Sarah Ray from Be Positive, they're both with us on Monday to kick off November. 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you'll be with us too, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. For Lorraine, Lauren, what was the toughest room that you had to deal with in that house?
Well, they were all kind of tough because what happened was the house that she bought was non-existent other than basically the shell. I mean, the toilet was, for all intents and purposes, a hole in the ground. The house was not particularly livable. I mean, it basically had trees growing out of the inside of the house. It was just a really rough and tumble house. So I think the hardest thing was figuring out how to set it up, how to create a layout that would work for family, and then kind of allocating the spaces to function for them. So bathrooms for sure were tough because they involved major plumbing and electrical and modern day appliances and, you know, the kitchen as well for that matter. So I think that the rooms that were the hardest were the ones that are going to have to function and not just be pretty, but actually kind of work for the long haul so she could continue to use the house for years to come.
Mm-hmm. Now, because she's going from back and forth as opposed to staying there for an extended period of time, what kind of challenge was it for your production team to do this series?
That's a good question. We had our lead producers on the ground floor in Italy, so they were able to capture work that was done when Lorraine wasn't there, because what we wanted to make sure was that we satisfied the HGTV audience by making sure that all the key moments in construction and design were covered. So just because she had to go back and forth, we were able to continue a presence there. Of course, her whole team of her contractors, carpenters, you know, all of the people that were on the ground were all locally based as well, Italians. And so they were there working the entire time too. So her coming back and forth did not slow down the process in any way. It just, I'm sure, made it kind of emotionally charged and exciting for her to see. She got mini reveals every time she came into town because so much work would be done in between each trip she was able to take. And that's all captured in the show. You'll see her going back and forth. You'll see her doing check-ins. It's fun. You feel like you are part of this ride right along with Lorraine.
And what about the neighbors in that neighborhood where she's with this house? What do they think about it? Do we get a chance to see what their situation is with her over time?
Yes, and that was one of the things that surprised me in terms of just how sweet the show was. I thought it would be a really interesting renovation show. What I didn't realize is that it was going to become a show about friendship and building community. And I think that's what I found so beautiful was the neighbors were welcoming. I think they saw this whole opportunity for these €1 homes as a way of building a community that hadn't had a lot of attention for a while. And so they were warm, they were welcoming. I mean, she joked that they also recognized it was kind of fun to have a, you know, to have a star in town. But even more than that, she became really close to them, and her contractor became a very dear friend to the point where I don't want to give it away, but in the final episode, you'll just see how sweet they are with each other. So it was a really nice, unexpected aspect of the show was just how close everybody became and how welcoming they were to her.
Mm-hmm. Does this show open up a new avenue of programming for HGTV in terms of doing more things overseas as well as doing things in the United States? For example, maybe going up to Canada for a series, or maybe going to England for a series, maybe going to Asia for a series.
Absolutely, and we're actually doing that more and more. We just finished a series called Renovation Island that followed this wonderful couple who decided to kind of leave everything behind and move to the Bahamas to create a small resort, and that really rated quite well and was a very interesting adventure. We're doing a new series called My Lottery Dream Home International, which follows the same basic premise of our U.S. version, but follows lottery winners in the U.K. and that region. So we're very open. And then, of course, as you know, House Hunters International, which is all over the whole world. But we're definitely open to interesting stories about interesting design, good renovation, and you know, fascinating parts of the world. I think that's one of the escapist qualities of HGTV that our viewers love so much.
And in fact, Renovation Island has turned out to be one of the big new series so far this fall. Why do you think it happened that way? I understand the ratings have gone up each episode.
Yes, they did. They surprised even us just how high that show rated. And I really truly think that it's because we're in a time in the world right now where everybody is dreaming of escaping. And it's that one time that I think a lot of families, a lot of individuals are thinking, what if I left city life behind or suburban life behind and just went on an adventure? And I think that the thought of doing that in the Bahamas, in a beautiful resort, and being able to do it with your family just appealed to people. And then when you see the drama of just how difficult it is to create a hotel is a whole other added layer of just interest and intrigue, because it's a lot of fun to see a place come together too.
Mm-hmm. How has the coronavirus pandemic impacted HGTV's programming, the way you produce from, especially because a lot of your programs are done not in a studio, unlike Food Network or other networks in the family of Discovery Communications, but a lot of them are on location. So I'm curious how, when you're in location for these shows, when you go the last 5-6 months of film or taping, how the pandemic has affected how they get produced.
Yeah, that's a good question as well. We've gone through different phases. So early on in the pandemic, we came up with a couple of shows that we knew we could shoot in completely 100% COVID-safe conditions. So all by Zoom or people self-shot in their own homes. And so we started off very, very small footprint, some quick turnaround shows that could hit air quickly. I'll give you a couple of examples. We had one called Design at Your Door. We had another one called Hot Mess House. And these were all shot purely with Zoom and or homeowner cameras. Then from there, we had to move on to how do we work with shows that are already in production. And at that point, there are much more extreme COVID protocols. You know, sets are deemed safe. We keep very small crews. We keep people socially distanced. Like, we're just kind of taking it like the rest of the world. But I think that, to your point, because we're not doing a lot of our shows in huge studio environments, it's much easier when you have two people renovating a house than if you had 200 people on the set of an enormous competition show. And so our challenges were different than some of the other networks in many ways, but we've been trying to keep great content pumping out and making sure that we're doing it in as safe a way as possible.
Lorraine Bracco's new series on Home and Garden Television, My Big Italian Adventure, premieres tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on that channel, which is available on cable and satellite. We've got Laura Ruck. He is the Group Senior Vice President of Program Development for that network. He's with us live from New York this half hour. On Tomorrow will be televised. Tomorrow will be live from New York. Happy to have you with us this pre-Halloween Friday, last Friday of October 2020, and our last episode of the month. So we'd like to have you involved in the conversation. All you got to do is make the call, 646-652-2906, or make your way to our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. If you love Succession, the Emmy Award-winning series this year in drama on HBO, you might like Industry, which premieres next month. And we will have next Friday on Tomorrow We Televised, live from across the Atlantic, the creative executive producers of that series, Mickey Dawn and Conrad Kay. Mickey and Conrad will be with us live from Great Britain. And next Monday on Tomorrow We Televised, among our guests will be the executive producer of CBS's daytime game show pair, Let's Make a Deal. And they've had to do a lot to deal with the coronavirus pandemic. And that week, they will be starting new daytime episodes. They've already done one of a group of live primetime shows that was on last week. And now they're getting back to daytime, and they've had to do a lot of reconstruction to make that show work. John Quinn, the executive producer of Let's Make a Deal, starting his second season with that program. He will be with us live, and he'll be our lead guest. That's a week from Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. You know, Guy Fieri at your counterpart, Food Network, has been doing a very interesting offshoot of diners, drive-ins, and dives because he can't get to the restaurants that he would normally do to film that show. So what he's done is to have some of his past visitors go ahead and send him recipes for the series they call Takeout. And I'm wondering if there's been a similar show that's been in play at the Home and Garden Television, where you have some of the house people contractors that you've worked with do a similar kind of show.
We have done a couple things like that. We have a show called House in a Hurry that is on the air where real homeowners have like a weekend or less to genuinely find a house to live in. And what we thought after COVID and we finished shooting that season is it would be fun to do new versions of those shows to have the same people who were in the previous season of the show commenting on the adventure. And so we were able to shoot with them in their own home, do fresh new content, but also doing it in combination with the footage that existed from the original series. And so that would be our equivalent to take out, because it was a way of getting some more fun play and some fun stories out of a show that had already been on the air by shooting some new fresh content with the people that participated in it.
Going back to my big Italian adventure, to have someone the stature of Lorraine Bracco doing a program with you is quite, it's a big swing for your network. Do you think we're going to see similar big swings with other celebrities, whether they are in entertainment or other walks of life?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that we always say at HGTV, we love celebrities, but we tend not to feature celebrities doing their own homes or talking in a way that really feels like we're just seeing shows about mansions or millionaires. We really like to see celebrities that are either doing the work or involved in the renovation or somehow in this industry. And so when you see Celebrity IOU, it's one of our highest rated shows, and it's really a lovely show about celebrities who are giving back to somebody in their life who did something special or meaningful to them. And that, it's a very humanizing and a very wonderful show. Lorraine's home, too, it was a €1 purchase. It was not a home that was millions of dollars, even though she put a lot of her own money into it, obviously. But there was a very humanizing and family-oriented quality to it. And so I think that is what appealed to HGTV, as opposed to just seeing celebrities for the sake of celebrities on the air.
Another big swing that your network attempted recently was to do Extreme Makeover Home Edition. Bring that show back, which had a very great run on ABC, and bring it back bigger and better than ever on HGTV. What did you and your production people learn from that experience of doing a show like that, you know, to bring back a program like Extreme Makeover?
That show was life-changing, and I don't use that lightly. It was one of the most extraordinary sets I've ever been on in my life, and I use this as an example. You see how fast things can get done when there is a buttoned-up and organized team that is just in sync with each other. And I was on set in Fresno for an episode. I had to take a conference call, so I left set for 1 hour, and I missed an entire pool getting installed. So it was just an incredible opportunity to see things that work so quickly. To me, it was like watching a beautiful dance where every single person on set knew what their role was, what they needed to get done, what the deadline was, what the needs of this family were. And so it was a very special show because it just showed to me TV production at its absolute most fine-tuned and best.
Do we know if Extreme Makeover is coming back for another season? And if not, I understand Ty Pennington, who of course has been long associated with that show, is doing a new program for you. That'll be on soon.
Yeah, I'm not sure about Extreme because it would be a hard show to shoot during COVID right now with the huge teams there. But we are doing a brand new series with Ty that is really going wonderfully. It's not really announced 100% yet, so I'll share those details for another interview, but we're excited to be working with them.
Well, if you can, share what you see as the vision for your network for 2021. What kind of new directions do you see the channel taking?
I see us going in a number of really fun directions. I think that what we found is that our viewers really want to find attainable and aspirational shows that can make them dream of living just a little bit in a prettier environment or maybe in a different region. And so I think we're going to explore what's really top of mind for people right now. And that's just that escapist quality. We've all been trapped in our homes now for a number of months. How would your home be if you could make it what you want it to be? How could it function for you better? Where would you live if you didn't live in this home? What countries are appealing to you right now, or what cities that you've never been to would be appealing to you to live in? Basically, we're just expanding the definition of home to make it not as much about decor or design, but function, fantasy, things that families are looking for in a time like this. And I think that escapism is a big word there. So we have a lot of new shows coming out that I think are going to really excite our viewers, because just the breadth and quality of the shows, but also the different types of talent that we've worked with, some of the designers we've discovered as of late. So you're going to see some fresh new faces, and then, of course, franchises with your favorite HGTV talent that aren't going anywhere either.
Yeah. Speaking of talent, is there someone who's going to jump on the scene next year that we should be paying attention to, either a designer or a contractor or just an all-around host who we all should be paying attention to?
You know, there are a number of talent that we're super excited about. There's a combination of talent that are brand new, doing brand new freshman series that, you know, we just finished a new series called Selling the Big Easy with a brand new talent named Brittany Piccolo Ramos. And she was just a burst of fun energy that came from the New Orleans area and showed people how to live in these fabulous homes in that region. And so she's someone to watch out for in, you know, upcoming episodes. I think that it's also a good opportunity to look out for just some of our new series that are going to be released. And we have everything from a new series based in Detroit with a couple that buys homes on entire blocks to try to save communities. You know, we have a lot of talent that are out there that are just almost recognizable names, and I'm hoping that in the next season of watching their shows, it'll take them to that next level.
Once again, the program that HGTV is premiering tonight with Oscar and Emmy nominee Lorraine Bracco is My Big Italian Adventure. You can catch it tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on Home and Garden Television. Of course, check your local links for where HGTV is available in the area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online and the network, HGTV.com. It's HGTV.com. It's a service from Discovery Communications. Ron Royce, Group Senior Vice President of Program Development at HGTV. Thanks for joining us here in New York. Congratulations on this new show with Lorraine Bracco and everything that's going on with the network currently in the future. And we'd love to have you back anytime. It's been a delight.
Thank you so much. It's been delightful talking to you. Have a great weekend. And thanks to all of your for your fans and for your viewers for listening to this. Thank you.
You're very, very welcome, Lauren. Happy Halloween to you and everybody at HGTV. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Lauren Roach, Group C Vice President at Program Development HGTV, joining us live from New York. March Marvin Televised coming away, but first some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. Hey, all you Jack Reacher fans out there, while you are waiting for either a Tom Cruise movie to pop up again, or there's a Jack Reacher series that is going to be coming on, I believe, in 2021, how about this? There's a brand new Jack Reacher audiobook that you can get right now through Audible.com. It's called The Sentinel by its authors Lee and Andrew Child. And all you got to do is go to audibletrial.com, set televised, and have that be your pick for a one-month trial. You know, Audible.com, I should say, is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and very much inspiration. Over 200,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, and whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, Amazon Music, or iHeartRadio, or other podcast destinations. Remember, if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, remember that place, audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook, health and wellness material for a limited time only, that one-month trial, and great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. And get this, if you're already an Amazon Prime member, you make that two audiobooks, and one of them could be a choice from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. We're talking about original audio productions, best of Broadway, best of Broadway regional theater, and great one woman and one man performances. So how about making this Halloween weekend or this upcoming holiday season a great way to find out how Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. It makes a great gift this holiday season, and it's not too far away with Thanksgiving and Christmas and so on. So how about doing it? Audibletrial.com/televised. You won't be disappointed. When we come back, there's a new venture called Exile Content, and it's out to give Latino content makers an opportunity to get into Spanish and English language TV programming. Two of the key people behind it, the chief executive Alejandro Uribe will join us live from Mexico City, and team member Nando Val will join us from Los Angeles. Get to both of them this next half hour, plus our classic trivia question of the week. But first, we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, TuneIn.com, at TuneIn Radio. And together, they reach over 50 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Remember, TuneIn Radio is your home for the ongoing coronavirus news channel. Keep up to date this weekend and beyond, 24/7, what's going on in the pandemic, through special reporting, podcasts, and other original material. The coronavirus news channel, your way 24/7, exclusively, TuneIn Radio at TuneIn.com. Welcome back to our second half hour of this 90-day edition of Tommy Televised, last one for October 2020. Happy Halloween weekend to you and all. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. 40 degrees at the top of the hour. Sun is getting brighter by the moment. Happy you're with us, the day before Halloween. And we've got some more guests coming your way to just join us in the hour ahead. So be part of the program. Get interactive with this number, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. In this half hour, we're going to showcase a new venture that is out to expand what's possible for Spanish and English language TV programming and film. And they want to do it and open up opportunities for many a new Latino creator. The program is called Exile Content. Joining us live, an exclusive interview from Mexico City, Mexico, is its chief executive, Alejandro Uribe. Alejandro, buenos dias. Welcome in.
Buenos dias, Simon. How are you? Thank you for having us.
It is a pleasure. And joining both of us live from Los Angeles is one of the team members at Exile. His name is Nando Valley. Nando, welcome in.
Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure for both of you. Alejandro, we'll start with you. What is the mandate of your venture?
So Exile is a new media company that's creating across a number of formats for multicultural and global Spanish-speaking audiences. As you've probably seen from some of the shows that we've already announced, we primarily cater to platforms, whether that be in audio or productions, and we do premium series for the demographics that we represent and are growing, which is the global Latino or multicultural audience.
And Nando, by being a team member in this company, what does it mean by that? What is the idea of being a team member?
Well, it's a small company, so we all do a little bit of everything. But you know, we're all, you know, I'm technically the head of the podcasting division, but I'm also involved in several of the unscripted and scripted projects. We all kind of helped out to develop some of these stories that we're working with that we think can really resonate with Spanish language audiences all over the world.
I want to get back to podcasting because we are seeing more and more podcasts being adapted to television shows. I'm really curious whether that's in the Exile game plan. Alejandro, when it comes to television, what are the projects you've got going or about to get going?
So the only one that I'm allowed to announce that has already been made public is one with Diego Luna that we have on Netflix called Todo Va a Estar Bien, Everything's Going to Be Okay, which is set for a 2021 launch. And otherwise, we have a number of other properties that have been set up or are in the works that haven't yet been announced yet.
How soon will they be announced? What are you looking at in terms of, in general speaking, a 2021 situation?
I would say that it's ultimately dependent on my partners and distributors, and I don't want to speak for them on timelines. But I would say that in 2021, you'll see a number of Exile productions on the screen globally on a lot of the platforms that you could expect.
Nando, in terms of podcasts, as I mentioned a moment ago, we're seeing more and more podcast makers have wider horizons. They're either adapting podcasts into television programs, some of which have been quite successful, like Homecoming, for example, on Amazon, Modern Love, also on Amazon, etc. But they're also looking at starting podcasts with the ability to go television down the road. Is that in the game plan at Exile? And what kind of podcasts are you working on?
That is absolutely in the game plan at Exile. That is one of our strategic like tent poles, I would say, in the podcasting division. We look at projects as they come in, and we try to evaluate it across the whole team to see if there is potential beyond the audio space and into film or television, whether that's docuseries or scripted. You know, we really believe that that's one of our competitive advantages in the podcasting space because we are a full-fledged studio. You know, we can offer creators that avenue toward a film or television projects through their podcasting. So yeah, that is absolutely a key part of what we're doing. You know, we're working on several podcasts right now, some in the sports space, some in the true crime kind of narco space, as well as several other projects. But yeah, that is absolutely something that we're focused on.
And how are you looking at both unscripted and scripted? Because we're finding now that although a lot of the podcasts at this point are unscripted, that we're now starting to see, and some of them have been adapted to scripted TV shows, that we're seeing now a movement towards scripted television, scripted podcasts, again, with the ability to go down the road.
Yes, absolutely. We're looking at both scripted and non-scripted podcasts. I mean, obviously, podcasts are primarily non-scripted, especially here in the United States. But we are absolutely looking at scripted podcasts as well. We're looking at some for kids, for children. We're looking at some for adults. We're looking at potential collaborations with theater companies to adapt plays to the podcasting space, because we think that's a very easy transition. So, yeah, we're looking at both scripted and non-scripted.
Yeah, Alejandro, then we just pointed to something, which is in terms of getting these podcasts together, it sounds like he's tapping into all sorts of talent that has not been tapped into before, like local theater companies, like graphic novelists or comic book people, or other different sources of talent. Is that one of the things that you're keen on when it comes to television projects, is to try to tap into Latinos in various enterprises that are not in TV yet, but you see their work in theater or in filmmaking or in comic books or graphic novels or doing stuff for kids that you see having a television possibility?
Yep. No, I think that both the nature of the company and now the world that we live in and what our audiences expect, that the idea of good IP and good stories can come from anywhere. You're essentially just competing for people's times, necessarily always within a format, and being able to identify whether it be talent or format and mix them in very creative ways, whether it's having like on-screen talent, reading or interpreting narrative scripted podcasts, or finding people like comic book artists or theaters that have the potential to make the transformation, particularly in areas where they carry expertise, is an advantage and something that we see as kind of like the growing areas of how we can use a new venture like Exile to make sure that we think about every path from the get-go, that when we see a book, a graphic novel, an idea, we can have Nando and a lot of the scripted or unscripted team members make the choice of wherever it's natural for it to engage with audiences, that we go for it.
What kind of feedback are you getting from the Latino creative community? Where do they see what they want your venture to do? And also, I'll get to the second part in a moment. First, let's start with creative community. What is their reaction so far to your venture and working with you?
I would say that it's been overwhelmingly positive. That I think, fortunately, Hollywood and the rest of the industry is, for the first time, starting to pay attention. But being able to work with a company that has the financial capabilities and the scale to develop, produce, and do podcasts and is representative of the audiences that they're trying to reach has been a first, unfortunately, for a lot of them for a long time, but very positive since we can understand where they're coming from, the ideas that they're trying to do, and elevate them in a way that is comprehensive of all of that.
And Nando, what about the interest level from production companies, various networks, both English and Spanish language? What kind of initial reaction do they have with your company being on the scene?
Well, again, like it's been overwhelmingly positive in that we are seeing a huge amount of demand for Spanish language content, and what we're trying to provide is that ability, especially in the podcast space, to produce our Spanish language podcast, but also do an English language version, and that kind of gives them double the bang for their buck. What we're just seeing in general is that there is a huge demand in Hollywood for stories that were underrepresented in the past, and they're looking to people like us to fill that demand, and that's what we're doing, as well as the expansion, obviously the explosion of growth from demand from places like Mexico, Colombia, and Spain, both for podcasts and for streaming. So that's where we're placed firmly in between that, and we're trying to service that huge demand.
We're talking about Exile Content. It's a new company that is out to expand what's possible for English and Spanish language television programming involving Latino content creators. We've got Alexander Uribe. He is the chief executive of the venture, and he's live from Mexico City, Mexico, this half hour, along with Nando Vila, one of the team members in the company, and he's live from Los Angeles. And they're both with us right here on Tomorrow We Televise. And happy year along, too, for the ride. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York, where it is now 40 degrees at the top of the hour. And if you have a question or comment for both of our guests, make that call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Remember, coming up Monday on Tomorrow We Televise, the next time we get together, our first time in November, we will have the co-star of the new CBS sitcom from Chuck Lorre and Company, Be Positive. It is CBS's only new comedy that's premiering this fall. And the person we've got is co-star Sarah Ray. Some of you remember her from her program Less Than Perfect. The show got Less Than Perfect reviews, but she was an amazing scene stealer. So Sarah Ray will be with us. And that's coming up on our lead guest. And then from the critically acclaimed new Netflix miniseries, The Queen's Gambit, we'll have film editor Michelle Cicero. Among her other credits, Godless, a couple years ago, from the same writer-director of The Queen's Gambit, Scott Frank, and Ava DuVernay's Emmy and Peabody Award-winning miniseries, When They See Us. Sarah Rowe, Michelle DeCero, Force with a Fly, Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Alejandro, I've been covering the Spanish language marketplace in television for 40 years, from FIN, which then became Univision, and the wide range of... What was that?
Mm-hmm. That was a bit of background. Apologies.
No problem. Wonderful surprise. A little disruption there in the conversation. Anyway, Alejandro, there has been a lot of development with Spanish language television ever since, especially with unscripted, with news, with daytime programming, and so on. But one area that still it seems it hasn't moved the needle is Spanish language television programming produced in the United States, scripted programming, whether it's weekly or nightly, that's produced in the United States, involving U.S. Latinos, writers, producers, directors, and so on. Way back when I raised the issue, the question was, well, we don't have enough advertising base, only a few advertisers among the hundreds that do national television work with us, and it was understandable. Now here we are in 2020, lots of advertisers involved with Spanish language television, whether it's Univision, Telemundo, Azteca America. There's a new network now on Smart TV sets, Canela TV. We've had them on the program earlier this year. But it seems that it's still the rare exception to have a Spanish language television program scripted, produced in the U.S. Betty and Nueva York was one of the exceptions last year on Telemundo. I know Telemundo is doing a romantic comedy starting in the thing produced starting in January. Why is that, and is this something that Exile is going to address?
That's a great question, and unfortunately one that you're right, that for some reason the local or traditional players just haven't seemed to caught up. And without getting in too many of, like, the boring details, since we also used to work at one of those companies, both at Televisa, which provided content to Univision, as well as Univision, the way that they were set up historically, which I'm sure you're familiar with, is that the demographic composition of Latinos in the U.S. Was quite similar and primarily dominated by the Mexican diaspora, and a lot of these channels relied on their local partners in Mexico to just provide the bulk, obviously for a number of costs as well as just the affinity. But that has obviously changed, and Latinos, even like Nando and myself, who are second generation or have grown primarily in the U.S., we're interested in different types of content. We haven't grown up with the same geographical barriers, and our expectations in terms of quality themes and everything else as naturally is different and marked by sort of different generations. And we think, although we work with Univision and Telemundo in certain cases, and we're always exploring possibilities to raise or do, like, premium shows in different formats, Exile is very much competing and active in that space to find and produce the next generation of Latino content can address the needs of this now large audience that's very much integrated culturally with the U.S. and the same generation. I would say that it's based more around general affinities and creating something of equal quality more than just necessarily doing something in Spanish or bilingual.
Yeah. And my sense is it can be done. And it really can. We know the talent's there, whether it's here in New York, whether it's in Los Angeles, whether it's in Texas, whether it's in Miami, except it's Chicago, it's there. It just needs an ongoing commitment, it seems.
Agreed.
We know when it gets produced.
I was just going to say, I think In the Heights, had it come out this summer, would probably have been one of the biggest films of the summer. And I think initiatives like that that you're starting to see to a certain case in film just needs more commitment from like all of the platforms and the buyers. And we've already proven that an audience is there.
Yeah. And you mentioned Netflix. I hope that with Bella Bajorian now as the head of Global TV, that she might take a lead role in terms of putting together a show that's done in the United States with Latino talent. They've done a very good job, by the way, in terms of Latin America, in terms of shows. They, of course, you know, they just renewed Narcos Mexico for a third season. Narcos was a groundbreaking show for Spanish language television, period. And, of course, it got the first season got the major breakthrough by being on Univision First Down Netflix, which was a really gutsy thing to do. And you hope that maybe Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, or any of the mega programming services like Apple TV Plus could be maybe the catalyst.
I agree entirely, and I would say that Netflix has the advantage that they're also launching this Selena show about the Texan singer in the U.S., and you're going to see more of a concentrated effort there. And I think all of the platforms that understand and are based less on advertisers but more on satisfying directly the audience will probably agree with you, will be the catalyst in order for us to see more content here.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Selena series. I should point out they also have a sitcom called Mystery with Diego Iglesias also, which they did this year, which I thought was a pretty funny show, a videotape comedy with for a live audience. I think it may be coming back for a second season, too. So when it comes to English language television involving Latinos, they have a very good tracker, also Hectified and On My Block, which is a really, really good show.
Agree.
Nando, how many teams are there in Exile? You're handling podcasts from Scripted and Unscripted. What are some of the other teams and what are they doing?
Well, to be clear, I don't head up Unscripted or Scripted. We have teams there that we have a head of Unscripted named Miguel Tamayo, and we have he used to run Unscripted for the Players Tribune, and we have our head of Scripted is a guy named Alonso Aguilar, and, you know, who's a longtime kind of Mexican in the sort of film festival scene. And so, yeah, we have those worlds. We also have our marketing teams, obviously, and, you know, business affairs and legal and all that stuff. So yeah, we have a bunch of teams working across all the platforms, working across all the regions. We have people in Mexico. We have people in the United States, in Los Angeles, and in Miami. So we're kind of all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Any possibility of working in New York with people in New York? You know, we have here in New York, the mayor's office of the entertainment is now headed by Ann Del Castillo. She's in her second year there. We had her on the show, by the way, earlier this year. We're now starting to see television production rev up again with series. The reps are very nice. I think she's done a great job in terms of getting TV production back into New York. Any chance of maybe working with her and her organization at some point?
We would love to. We're obviously open to working with anyone. We are not closing off our door by any stretch of the imagination to anyone.
And New York is particularly important for a number of reasons of the U.S. Latino community. There's just a lot that has happened there that we're working on stories on, like, the origins of salsa, the musical genre, which I'm sure a lot of the local New Yorkers know, started in New York and then came back to the rest of Latin America. There's obviously, like, the Puerto Rican diaspora and everything around stories that touch New York, and the more partners that we can find, the better.
Mm-hmm. We are speaking with two of the key people at Exile Content. That's the brand new venture that is out to really expand what's possible for both Spanish and English language television programming. We've got Alejandro Rivadulay from Mexico City. He's the chief executive of the venture, which, by the way, was also formed by Isaac Lee, former head of Univision News, and also Fusion, the Univision ABC at one point joint venture network, which, by the way, gives a lot of very interesting shows in the world of news and programs because of news and public affairs. And also joining us live from Los Angeles is team member Nacho Valley. They're both with us live this half hour on Smart Beat Televine. Sign up, I'm with you as well. And we're all together for the next few minutes. If you have a question or comment for them, don't be shy. Get interactive, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, Simon Apples 04 by name. Coming up in a few minutes, our classic trivia question of the week. We're going for our third weekly winner in a row, and it can be you if you have the correct answer to the question, which is, by the way, very musical-oriented. Incidentally, when it comes to unscripted, Alejandro, what kind of things are you looking at? Are you looking at game show? Are you looking at talent competition? Are you looking at reality? What kind of things are coming your way?
No, look, I think we're open to all of those things eventually, but our main core focus and where our area of expertise is in the premium docuseries space. Right now, and if you've seen kind of the trades around the announcements we've made, we just wrapped on the creation of the women's team of the Real Madrid franchise in Spain, which Nando can tell you a lot about, and just give you a sense of like the human narrative stories that we want to tell in our communities. And we're working on a number of documentaries in the U.S., in all of our territories that cross either true crime or just very interesting characters and stories, generalized and serialized formats, sometimes in like films, but that's the focus for the moment.
Talk about that Real Madrid documentary. Of course, Real Madrid, one of the great soccer teams in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually very close to my heart because my family's from Madrid, and I've been a long-time season ticket holder of Real Madrid, so I'm definitely biased when it comes to this. But, you know, Real Madrid was one of the last major soccer teams in the world to not have a women's team, and we were able to get in on the ground floor as they sort of started their women's team, which was done in a very interesting way. They basically absorbed a smaller neighborhood club from like a working class suburb of Madrid and basically transformed it into the Real Madrid women's team. And we've had our cameras rolling from day one and we're putting together now the episodes, and it's really like just a historic moment both in global soccer, but also in the history of women's sports, as Real Madrid is the most popular soccer brand in the world, but it also was one of the last kind of teams to get a women's team. So obviously the attention was on big time as they sort of built out the squad, signed top players, and we were there throughout the whole process.
Alejandro, talk about the Diego Luna project, which is going to be your first Spanish language venture with Netflix. Tell us more about the storyline and Diego's involvement with this.
So Diego is has just wrapped showrunning the show before he went on to act to like the UK to do his sort of next big acting project. That this is the first time he's been involved and done a number of great films. But this is the first time that he wanted to do a series, and it's a very it's a romantic comedy of sorts that shows a Mexico that hasn't been seen before. That if you've been able to travel here, like generally what you've seen in Narcos or some of these shows isn't really representative of like the current generation or what most Mexicans experience in their day to day. And this show takes you into, like, there through very affable characters into the life of what Mexico City looks like and relationships. And it's this amorphous series that takes on different themes and characters throughout the life of it. And we're incredibly proud to have been part of the process and looking forward to being launched at Netflix beginning of next year.
Diego has formed his own production company, and we're seeing many more Latino celebrities, people like Abe Longoria, John Leguizamo, America Ferrera, Jennifer Lopez. They all either have production companies up and running, and some are about to have production companies up and running. Have you made contact with companies like Diego's in terms of trying to form extended partnerships And at the same time, so on another level, we're seeing organizations like the Blacklist now starting to work with different organizations like the NALIP, the National Association of Latino Independent Producers, coming up with lists of TV pilots promising Latino scriptwriters and creators. Karen Cicero, the writer of Vida, the creator of that Starz hit for 3 seasons. She's now working with Universal Content Productions on Latinx Context Lab, which is trying to work with talent to create shows. Do you see extended relationships on both those levels, individual Latino creators as well as organizations like Blacklist?
Yep, no, agree. We know the Blacklist, and we've worked with them as well as Nalip and Ben Lopez and everyone there, and we're a very talent-centric studio, and we operate and have a number of deals with production companies. That we have one with Nicolas Feliz, the producer of Roma, who's won an Academy Award, and now we're also working on a number of like Latinx initiatives and always looking to partner with talent and their production companies in the spaces that they operate.
Mm-hmm. Final question, both of you, and Nando, I'll start with you. What is it like to have this company going at a time where there are so many options now for both Spanish and English language programming? The broadcast networks, the cable networks, the multicast channels, the services like Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon, the mega services like Disney Plus and Apple TV Plus, and soon Paramount Plus, CBS All Access, and then all these networks that in the face of the pandemic have started to come out of the closet, some organized by people of color, many of them independent players, and they're going to be using smart TV sets and smart TV devices like Canela TV. What's it like to be operating in that environment where there are so many options and so many choices to work with?
Well, it's obviously very exciting. I mean, we have no shortage of places to put content on these days, and it's just the breathtaking speed of that change is something that can't be understated. I mean, just think about what it was maybe 5 or 6 years ago, where there weren't as many options for a company like Exile to be existing. Now, Exile's in a position where they can service this unbelievable growth and explosion in demand that has come not just here in the United States, but all over Latin America and Spain, you know, where they are, you know, the sort of cable revolution didn't happen in the same way that it happened here. So it's just, it's really been just an absolute tsunami of demand, and we don't have any shortage of partners to work with and places to put our content.
Alejandro, your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I agree completely with Nando that I absolutely, I'm obviously biased, but I believe, and it's only sort of accelerated in the process that since we've started, that it was a perfect time to start a new venture in the content space serving these audiences, that the number of buyers has probably quadrupled since when we first started this in terms of people looking for our content, and being able to have the track record that the team has, the partnerships and the reputation to be the stamp of quality serving this audience couldn't have come at a better time, and we're thrilled and honored to be taking this ride with all of our talent partners.
If you want to know more about Exile content and the many projects it's about to do or will be doing down the road, here's where you go online, www.exilecontentstudio.com. It's exilecontentstudio.com. We're still looking forward to the TV projects, both English and Spanish language, that they will be joining the TV world with in the months and years to come. Alejandro Uribe from Mexico City and Nando Valle from Los Angeles, thank you both for coming on. All the very best to you and your team for what you're doing and what you will be doing. We look forward to covering what you're up to in the times ahead. Thanks for being with us. All the very best. Have a super weekend. Muchas gracias for coming aboard.
Thank you, Simon.
Good.
Have a good one.
Thank you.
You too. A super weekend. Alejandro Uribe and Nando Valle joining us live from Mexico City and Los Angeles proper. And now it's time for our Clapper Trivia Question of the Week. We're going for our third weekly winner in a row. We opened up with the question on Monday. And if you first with the correct answer, you will win an excellent biography book. It's called Hitman, 40 Years Making Music, Topping Charts, and Winning Grammys. It's the memoir of the legendary music producer and songwriter David Foster, published by Pocketbook in hardcover. And here's the question. When did the Grammy Awards, what year did the Grammy Awards go live on television? What year did the Grammy Awards go live on television? If you know the answer, email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Remember, when you email and post your name and where you're from, full name and address, and if so, we get, if you're first with the correct answer, you, of course, win. And if we don't get a winner by the end of today, we will post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook, Simon Applebaum, and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. This is UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to be in. One more time, here's the question. What year did the Grammy Awards go live on television? SimonApple04 is where you go at yahoo.com. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's where you go to play in. And we hope you do. And if you do, all the very best. When we come back in our next half hour, we're going to spotlight another program happening tonight on Showtime. It's a special about something that you might want to know about because it could impact how you live and your well-being. It's called Biohacking. The program is called Citizen Bio. The director of the program, Trish Dolman, and executive producer Graham Matson will join us live after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, TuneIn.com, and TuneIn Radio. Together, reach over 50 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, BTR is your home Sunday night for Lost Arts Radio Show. It's the Lost Arts Radio Show, music and more. Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. That's Lost Arts Radio Show right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best BTR speaker 24/7 only at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised for this month, October 2020. Welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour, wherever you may be. Simon Applebaum will be live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio. We're also on Amazon Music and the iRadio Podcast Network. 40 degrees at the top of the hour. Hurricane Theta has gone, and now we have a very cool start to the Halloween weekend. By the way, if you're celebrating Halloween, going trick-or-treating tonight and tomorrow, please be safe. Please be careful. Check out the food wherever you're offering. If you can, use gloves when you're giving treats out to people, and have a great time. Really, really have a great, excellent time. We really could use it. And if you have a question or comments for our guests coming up in this half hour, give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. Don't forget, our chat room is open, SimonApple04 by name. Find me at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's how you get involved as well. And remember, you can also have other people join the conversation by using Facebook Timeline. They've got a Facebook icon, your Blog Talk, Spreaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions, they'll be live with you. Chances are you may not have heard of this practice called biohacking. Well, tonight Showtime believes you ought to know because it would have a major impact on your well-being and your health, if not now, down the road. The special is called Citizen Bio. And joining us live from Vancouver, Canada, to talk about it is its director, Trish Holman. Trish, welcome in.
Hi, thanks for having me. How are you?
Very, very fine, thank you, Trish. And also joining us live is somebody who is making his second time with us on the program. You know him better as the executive producer and co-creator of the Peabody Award-winning Orphan Black, and more recently the executive producer of TNT's dramatic hit Snowpiercer, coming back for a second season in January, our good friend Graham Matson. Graham, happy to have you back with us.
Hey, thank you, Simon. Nice to be here.
And where are you calling us from, Graham?
I'm in Vancouver as well.
Great. Well, we're happy to have you both here. First of all, Trish, talk about biohacking. What is it?
Well, that's a good question. When I started out working on this film, I didn't know what it was either, but it really generally refers to people doing science outside of conventional institutions like university labs or outside of corporate labs or government labs. So you can find biohackers who've built a lab in their garage, in their kitchen, or in a shed in their backyard.
Graham, this is a very rare foray into documentary work for you. What inspired you to join Trish in doing this?
It goes back to about the middle of our run on Orphan Black when we were really looking into, you know, some of the genetics of cloning, and it was right around the time that the new technology of CRISPR was becoming widely available, and the patent war for that was beginning to play out, and it was just a fascinating subject for the writers and our researchers to pore over. And we sort of started, once Orphan Black had wrapped up, we were looking at whether or not there might be another series in this. But it was such a deep and wide subject that we decided while we were researching, we might as well start making a documentary. And I'm glad I did because, you know, I think one of the things we learned on this one is that, you know, that the truth is stranger than fiction on this one. And I'm glad we approached it from, you know, with a documentarian like Trish.
And Trisha, it's definitely out there, and the central character to this, he's no longer around, but when he was around, not only did he proliferate this idea of biohacking, but he actually had other people as his disciples. Tell us about this person and the disciples that, in fact, you talked with in making this special.
Well, biohackers are contrarians, so I'm not sure they'd love to be called disciples, but they certainly a group of biohackers found themselves working with a guy named Aaron Trawick. And when we set out to make the film, we really did a lot of research and got access to a lot of people in the biohacking world. I really just set out to make a film about biohacking because, as Graham said, it's super interesting. And I'm really interested in characters and people who are pushing the boundaries of society and creating social change. So I'm generally drawn to those subjects when I make documentary films. So that's why I came on board this project, and because I just thought, you know, this is really fascinating that the technology has evolved to such a degree that people can literally do genetic engineering at home. So we started filming and doing some development shooting, and we filmed at an event called Grindfest, which was an informal gathering of a subset of biohackers named Grinders, and they're primarily concerned with human augmentation and merging the human form with technology. So there we witnessed people doing like magnet implants and computer chip implants and teaching each other how to do this stuff safely and in a sterile environment. So that was our first shoot. And then a few months later, we heard about this guy named Aaron Trawick who had died. And it caused a lot of stir in the media and a lot of kerfuffle in the biohacking community. So I was like, well, what happened here? What went on? And it turned out that a lot of the people that we were talking to about being in the film had worked with Aaron. And in a way, his story revealed a bunch of things about what biohackers were trying to do. It's a bit of a cautionary tale. And we thought it was an interesting framing device for the film to look at that story. But as a way to look at biohacking in a more profound way, because what we discovered is that biohackers are really choosing to do this because they have altruistic intentions, whether you're looking at Tristan Roberts, who's trying to find some kind of treatment or medication for HIV and AIDS, which he has, or you're Gabriel Lucina, who's trying to, you know, find a cure for the plastic in the ocean. So when I met him, he was developing this plastic eating fungus. He's looking at reforestation and accelerating tree growth to address deforestation. Or someone like Josiah Zahner is often approached by people with rare genetic diseases that there aren't any cures or treatments being developed because there's just too few people on the planet that have them. So what we discovered through Aaron's story, he too, I think, set out initially to want to help people, but there became a clash between what he wanted to do and what the rest of the biohacking wanted to do, because biohackers generally come from this kind of hacker ethos where they believe in open source, they believe in sharing information and providing that information for free. So, you know, right now you can go online and Josiah Zahner and another biohacker named David Ishii are giving a free course on how you can make a COVID-19 vaccine yourself at home. You can take that class from them. But what it was is it revealed the clash when Aaron brought this kind of huckster sales kind of value and tried to monetize biohacking. And as Tristan Roberts says in the film, we don't think Aaron realized that biohackers are a bunch of anarchists. Like, these are people choosing to work outside of conventional institutions for a reason, because they want to do their own thing. They want to explore, and they don't want to be hampered by these institutions or by things like investment or money or expectations. So that's what we really discovered that story revealed, and just thought it was a very interesting look at a nascent movement, particularly in the U.S.
The program is called Citizen Bio. It is a special that definitely is worth your view, and it happens tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on Showtime. We've got Trish Dolman, the director of the program, and Graham Matson, the executive producer, also best known for Orphan Black and Snowpiercer. Snowpiercer, by the way, had a great first season on TNT this spring, coming back for a second season in January. Of course, Orphan Black later won the Peabody Award, and ultimately won an Emmy Award for its star, Tatiana Maslany. Anyway, both Graham and Trish were with us live from Vancouver, Canada, this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Tom and I'm with you from the other side of the U.S. of A. in North America. That's New York, 40 degrees at the top of the hour. And we want to hear from you. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Remember, coming up on our program Monday, we'll have Sarah Rue, the co-star of the new CBS series, Be Positive. It's their only original new series that they're launching this fall, and Sarah will tell us all about it, especially the fact that it was produced in a coronavirus pandemic environment. And from the film editor, the Netflix critically acclaimed miniseries, a lot of people think it's going to be a slam dunk for Emmy nominations, maybe even Peabody Award nomination too. We'll have the film editor from start to finish on that project, Michelle Tesoro. She also worked with Ava DuVernay on the Emmy and Peabody winning miniseries of last year for Netflix, When They See Us, as well as another Netflix miniseries with Scott Blank, who did The Queen's Gambit as writer and director, that's Godless. So Sarah Rue from Be Positive, Michelle Tesoro from The Queen's Gambit, and more. Both with us tomorrow on Monday. That's live 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, exclusively right here on Tomorrow We'll Be Televised. Graham, the more you got into this special and Trish's work, what interested you more and more and more as you got into this world of biohacking?
I think one of my early first impressions was that, you know, biohacking is a response to a number of, you know, it's a response to inequality in access to healthcare, and it's a response in, you know, the sort of ivory tower of institutionalized science or corporatized science. So, you know, these things aren't accessible to everybody, and certainly in the States, it's a response. So, the other aspect I think is that, you know, we it's a broad subject, as we said earlier, and there are biohackers all over the world. You know, this may just be the first chapter in it. So it's and the biohacking movements are different social responses, you know, depending on what they're responding to. Certain, you know, climate change in local aspects, be it in Indonesia or in Africa or these other places, there is endless application and need for people to harness these things themselves, I think.
Mm-hmm. Trish, as you were putting this together, did you find that everybody was going down the same pathway with biohacking, or as Graham was explaining a moment ago, there's like parallel planes here, parallel objectives, parallel opportunities that people are dealing with?
Yeah, I think it's a really varied community and a very individualistic community. I think in the film, Josiah describes biohackers as a group of decentralized people who mostly interact online in chat rooms and over social media. So you've got, you know, even in the film, you've got David Ishii, who's in Mississippi. You have Tristan Roberts, who was originally from Florida. Gabriel Lucina, who at the time was in Florida, now he's in Indiana. Josiah Zahner in Oakland. You've got people in LA. You've got, you know, literally what we discovered is that there's a community biolab in every city in North America. That part of this technology and this kind of movement goes hand in hand with the maker movement. So in many, many maker spaces, you'll find a community lab, and at those labs, you'll find people giving workshops or teaching each other how to do genetic engineering. Or I met a gentleman at a lab in Oakland called Counterculture, where he was trying to make his own Parkinson's medication because it was so expensive. So it's very, very interesting that people are often motivated by their own personal experience. And often that is an illness, and they're not either getting treatment, or that treatment is very expensive, or it's limiting them. It's forcing them to stay in a job that they don't want, to have health care. So there's often a very personal motivation or a political motivation. And, you know, someone like Gabriel Lucina and many of these other guys started out, you know, just tinkering around computers or getting into computer science, computer hacking. And then they discovered biology and really fell in love with it and developed a passion for it and what it could do as a tool. And certainly, you know, CRISPR and the advent of CRISPR changed all that. And really what the people, what they share in common is generally they're trying to democratize science. So as per what Graham just said, that it's a response to institutionalized science, and it's a response to the lack of equity when it comes to healthcare in the United States. So people are wanting to democratize science, to democratize healthcare. And what I really discovered as a filmmaker is that when there is a gap or a need in society, humans will just step in and fill that need. And I think that's what biohacking is really doing, is responding to a need.
Given both your backgrounds, Graham as a master storyteller, and your background, Trish, as a documentary producer telling stories like this, how did each of you contribute to each other? And I'll start with you, Trish. How did Graham's role as a storyteller, how did he contribute to your making of this? And then, Graham, I'll ask you what Trish's contribution was for you.
Yeah, well, I mean, as you said, Graham's a master storyteller. You know, I've admired his work and known his work for a long time and known him for many, many years. And he's really mastering the art of sci-fi storytelling and the art of the psychological thriller. You know, I think I first discovered Graham's work when he wrote a feature film called Cube, and I still think it's one of the best Canadian movies ever made. It's so smart. And this really taught psychological thriller. So this film was his idea, him and our other executive producer and his research team. And so I came on board really to execute that vision and to bring my years of experience as a documentary director and as a producer. You know, I've been doing this for a long time, 28 years, and have made a lot of documentaries, directed a number and produced a number, so was able to bring my expertise in, you know, finding character and telling stories through character and finding a window into a world through the people in it. And then Graham, because he is a master storyteller, was really influential in helping to bring more context to the story, and we worked very closely together. There's an animated section in the film that tells really the history of biohacking and the fact that very early scientists were biohackers. And human beings would have only discovered treatments using plants by trying them on themselves. And if you look at some of the European scientists of the last few centuries, they made discoveries through self-experimentation or through observation. If you look at the work of Louis Pasteur, or even more recently in this century, as described in the film by Jonas Salk, you know, he initially experimented on himself and his family, and then on survivors of polio before going on to what was the largest public clinical trial in human history. 2 million people tried the polio vaccine, and So I think we're about to go, what's very interesting to me in the timing of the film, by chance, is we're going to go through that collectively as a society, through that kind of same experience, right, of trying, hopefully, a vaccine for COVID-19 very soon.
And Graham, flip side of that question, how did Trish's work and documentary, how did it work with you in terms of shaping this documentary?
Well, it was a really different experience in storytelling because, you know, I had to, define the story in a sense. I had to, you know, working with a documentarian like Trish, who's someone who's quite used to letting the story come to you. You have to find and define the story. So the process of making it was different as well. I had a fascination with the subject and, but in terms of, you know, even pitching the story, it's more like, you know, we have this really interesting subject and we have these connections to the field and we've done this and this, and this is why it's really important and interesting now. But there's this understanding in the room that you're not that there's a story to discover here. You know, it's much different than going in and, you know, pitching my take on Snowpiercer or something. So, you know, it's an exercise in patience and sort of journalistic intent and integrity too. Especially when you're dealing with, we wanted to, you know, talk to Aaron Trawick's family and we wanted to, you know, get to the bottom of what was a pretty controversial figure and divisive figure in the biohacking community. But, you know, Trish is very good at letting the story tell itself. We're not trying to impose our own views here on biohackers or, we let the audience decide about the ethics at play here. And I think that sort of patience was my main lesson that I got watching Trish work, you know, patience indeed, and really giving someone else the story reins and writing backup and providing context like Trish said.
Trish, it sounds like if there's a headline that's relevant right now that's going to come out of this program tonight is there's at least one biohacker is working on a coronavirus vaccine. Does the U.S. government know about this? Does the Canadian government know about this? Is anyone the Center for Disease Control, NIH, et cetera, does anyone is taking this seriously? Do you think they will after seeing this documentary tonight?
Well, I mean, I don't know what the government's up to, but certainly, you know, we discovered that the FBI was intermingling with the biohacking community, coming to their conferences, showing up, coming to these community labs. So I'm sure the government is aware of what this course that Josiah is offering. I'm not sure, you know, other of the biohackers like Gabriel Lucina has self-administered a COVID-19 vaccine to himself. I don't know what the government knows or thinks about this, but I'm sure there's all sorts of things going on that we don't know about. And I do think that, you know, if you look at some recent interviews with Josiah, who was interviewed about these courses, and his response was that, you know, biohackers can move quicker and be more nimble than, say, some big lab. So if you have the ability to do this, I think the potential is infinite. I mean, I think biohackers have a huge amount of potential. I think their challenge comes in when you work outside of a regulated system and is finding the funds often to support yourself or to support your project. But I think the sky's the limit. You know, you're only limited by your imagination and what you can do when it comes to biohacking. And I think biohackers do have the potential to make huge amounts of social change. Let's see. The future will tell.
Yeah. Graham, back in the late 1950s, a writer named Merwin Gerard explored the possibility of an anthology series about psychic phenomena. He enrolled an actor, a director named John Newland, to do it. And, of course, the result was One Step Beyond, which ran 2.5 years on ABC, sponsored by Alcoa. There was a syndicated remake in the 70s. I got a hunch that that you may be looking at this, Graham, as, wow, this could be my next television series. Are we getting a preview of what might be coming out of your imagination?
You mean in terms of biohacking? Well, I don't know.
A biohacking,
you know,
anthology, or maybe inserting biohacking into a plot of an upcoming series you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think we touch on it a little bit in Snowpiercer. We certainly, you know, it was spawned by Orphan Black, and you know, it's contemporary. And when it comes to contemporary sci-fi, I just find it, I can't stop thinking about it. So, you know, maybe there's more chapters on in a documentary form as well. I'm sure it'll show up in fiction. I don't know about a whole series. Like I said, the truth has been stranger than fiction to a large degree here. And I just think, you know, this is it's an important time to be looking at these questions and continuing these conversations about open source versus proprietary science. So, you know, I'm happy to look at this as a serious subject rather than to try and fictionalize and sensationalize it.
Well, as Chris Carter, the X-Files, used to say, the truth is out there. And in the case of the situation of biohacking, it certainly is. And it will be on display for you to make your judgment about it tonight on Showtime. The program is called Citizen Bio, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on Showtime. Check the low list of where the network is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, here's where you go, www.sho.com, www.sho.com. Citizen Bio, tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on Showtime. It's very easy to see what comes out of the coronavirus pandemic vaccine situations here and whether governments and scientific organizations take notice with what we're dealing with right now. Graham Maxon, Trish Stillman, thank you both very, very much for coming on. Graham, thank you for popping in, and we hope to see you, hope to hear you soon. Congrats on Snowpiercer, by the way, and looking forward to the second season next January on TNT. And Trish, all the very best to you and this project and future projects you got. It's been a delight having you with us.
Much appreciated.
Thank you so much for having us. Yeah, really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Graham and Trish. Take care. Have a great, great weekend.
Bye, Simon.
Bye, Simon. You too.
Graham Maxon and you got it. Graham Maxon and Trish Stillman joining us from Vancouver, British Columbia on Tomorrow Be Televised. Unfortunately, because of the time, we wanted to give more time to this very special documentary. No takeaway of the week this week, but we will have it for you on Monday's episode. And when we come back with you on Monday, our guest will be from the new CBS comedy from Jeff Lurie, Be Positive, premiering next Thursday night, Sarah Rue, co-star, and from the Queen's Gambit film editor, Michelle DeCero. Don't forget, if you came in late on today's episode, want to catch up on something you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast. They'll be available shortly on Amazon Music, iHeartRadio's podcast network, Spreaker, and other podcast destinations. What do you think about our show today? Well, just look at where TV is at, where it's going. And what do you think about this whole issue of biohacking? I'd love to hear. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn as well. And remember, you can always reach me at simonapple04@yahoo.com. We do respond back. Why? Because what you say matters. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not those of the Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and contributors to this program. Our Prospects Associates, Mandolin, Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's General Manager, with Jay Steinberg, Head of Content, and the co-founders are Al Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow Be Televised is brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. For a 1 or 2 book flyer for 1 month, it's audibletrial.com/televised. Makes a great gift this Halloween season and the holiday season down the road. But Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful, safe Halloween weekend. We are back with you on Monday, day before Election Day 2020, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, Amazon Music, and the iRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to this Halloween weekend, please be safe and be great, and let's lift this pandemic now and forever. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.